So, as some of you know and some of you don't know, I'm a new resident here at Jokoji. I've been coming up here for almost 3 years now, but have just recently become from temporary resident to temporary, possible long-term resident. So, a while ago, if I read here on the back, June 20th of 2010, I received this from my teacher in a ceremony we call Jukai, where I took the precepts and the vows and took refuge in the Buddha, the Sangha, and the Dharma. So I'm working on another one now. I'm working on my second with my friend and sewing teacher, Karen. And as I'm working on it, I'm remembering some of the vows I took and the precepts, because each stitch you take refuge in the Buddha. Each stitch that you make, it's Namu Kiye Butsu. So you take refuge each stitch. And there are a few, as you can see. And they go on the back as well. So what I wanted to talk about today is something that I'm always struggling with since I can remember, since I was a little boy. To give you a little background, as some of you may have done, I went to this place called school. And I went early on because my birthday is late. It's November 21st. It's coming up for those of you who like to buy chocolate and tea as gifts. I will be receiving them. So I went into school early, some people would say. And so I was born in 63. So you can imagine back then in the old caveman days when we played with our hoops and sticks and scribbled upon our little chalkboards, things were different. So I just couldn't handle it. I couldn't sit still. I couldn't sit in my desk. And I wanted to walk around and say, hey, what are you doing? What's going on? And then I'd go to you and I'd go, oh, look at the birds out there. Aren't those birds unusual? So I got on my report card, Bobby likes to visit. So that's what I did. And I was so bored, I found ways to entertain myself. So I was like a class clown. You know, I would make jokes. And in doing this, I broke one of our precepts and our vows a lot that I think most comedians do, which is write speech. So that's what I wanted to talk about a little bit today, and my failings in being able to uphold that. So just to use some words from our old pal, Zen Master Dogen. I don't know if you know him, but he's quite a guy. So his kind speech means that when you see living beings, you arouse a mind of compassion and offer words of loving care. It is the absence of cruel or harsh speech. Please know that kind speech comes from a kind heart, and a kind heart has compassion as its seed. So I as I heard this, and Jiro was reading from this book, Moon in a Dewdrop, and he read this, some of this, so I went back and looked at the book again, because when I heard the words or the phrase kind speech rather than right speech, I suddenly had a shift in the way I was perceiving it. Instead of there being a mind that perceives this is right and this is wrong, I had the opportunity to address this in an entirely different way. Kind speech, what comes from my heart, not which speech is right or which speech is wrong. And when we're in the world out there doing our thing, like some of us are, we encounter harsh speech quite often, depending upon what you do for a living. And before I came to this, I was a web graphic designer and worked for some really large companies here in Silicon Valley. So there wasn't a lot of kind speech at work, especially when a deadline wasn't met or when you didn't finish what you started. Whatever the circumstance was, there was a lot of harsh speech. And so it's interesting when we begin to really look at this closely, who is the one determining what is harsh speech? Who or what is determining what is harsh speech? If someone is speaking to me and I have some sort of arising emotion, thought, feeling, I may determine that to be here in this little universe, that is harsh. But depending upon where that person comes from and what their culture is and what they think is harsh, it might not be harsh at all. So this is something that we can use a little bit out there at that point of where we understand that we may be coming from a space of judgment, defensiveness, or arising anger, and feeling that there is something that we need to defend, which is a right or an ideal or a concept. I know that this is extremely difficult, and I fail at it all the time. I'm here as one of the persons that fails at this, because in the moment when somebody says something harsh, there's sometimes an immediate reaction. Now, that's how I do it. I don't know, maybe some of you are immediately compassionate, but if somebody says something to me like, hey, jackass, get out of my way, I'm not really feeling immediate compassion at that moment. I'm really maybe having a habitually conditioned reaction. And then there's this opportunity, the more we work with this, or the more I've worked with this, is the ability to be able to catch myself before that habitually conditioned response comes out. So there's a moment of being able to stop. So I have this podcast, and I'm on the interwebs a lot. And this podcast, I talk about things like our practice and how I'm navigating, you know, my life in the corporate world, and how I'm kind of merging these ancient wisdom teachings into my workday world. So that's shifted and changed a little bit, but my perspective is still very much coming from that place of corporate life. So. And also communication outside of this realm, and the communication of Facebook and Twitter. So I asked this question of my Facebook friends and my Twitter friends. I asked them a question, what do you do when someone uses harsh speech? And I got a really interesting response, and that's what I was speaking about earlier, was a friend named Paul said, what you may think is inappropriate or unkind may seem perfectly reasonable to another. The lives we have led or been dealt shape all our values and ideals. As such, they will all be different. And that really gave me something to pause and reflect on. Another one was, I don't know if you know Joan Halifax, but she said, I feel compassion. Not a good state of mind to be in when you diss others. I thought that was pretty interesting too. So what is right or kind speech? So on the Eightfold Path, we have this thing called right speech. And this principle of ethical conduct in the Eightfold Path. So ethical conduct is viewed as a guideline to moral discipline, which supports the other principles of the path. This aspect is not self-sufficient, however essential, because mental purification can only be achieved through the cultivation of ethical conduct. The importance of speech in the context of Buddhist ethics is obvious. Words can break or save lives. Make enemies or friends. Start war or create peace. Buddha explained right speech as follows. To abstain from false speech, especially not to tell deliberate lies and not to speak deceitfully. To abstain from slanderous speech and not to use words maliciously against others. To abstain from harsh words that offend or hurt others. And to abstain from idle chatter that lacks purpose or depth. Positively phrased, this means to tell the truth, to speak friendly, warm, and gently, and to talk only when necessary. Now, this is impossible for some. I find it difficult. So, is it possible to use kind speech with someone who has just called you a name or been rude. Apparently, in more of the reading and discovering that I saw, is that if we don't have the wandering mind, if we are coming from this place of stillness, that there is a way not to have a response to this. So, can we have pity for those that use unkind speech? Dogen says, praise those with virtue and pity those without it. In kind speech is offered, little by little, virtue will grow. So those who hear kind speech from you will have a gladdened countenance and a joyful mind. It is the basis for reconciling rulers and in subduing enemies. It has the power to turn the destiny of a nation. So speech is a very, very powerful thing. So when we talk about praise those with virtue, what exactly is virtue? And looking it up, it's simply behavior showing high moral standards, paragons of virtue, a quality considered morally good or desirable in a person. So, as in patience is a virtue. And what exactly is pity? The feeling of sorrow and compassion caused by the suffering and misfortunes of others. Her voice was full of pity. So, once again, it's all derived from finding compassion in the circumstance where there may or may not be right speech or kind speech. Another clue Dogen gives us is to speak to sentient beings as you would a baby, with kindness, compassion, and care. And I saw a baby in the supermarket the other day. I was at Trader Joe's, and we were having a little conversation, just, you know, looking at each other and smiling. And this made me reflect on that and how would I use speech toward this small, tiny, defenseless being. So the Bodhisattva four methods of guidance are giving, kind speech, beneficial action, and identity action. So speak only words that do no harm. Now that's a little challenging, I think. One should speak only that word by which one would not torment oneself nor harm others. The word is indeed well spoken. So if we are using unkind speech to ourselves internally, it spills over into contact with others. So this is where we need to actually start. We can do the practice with others, but we need to start with how are we speaking to ourselves? Do we have kind speech, right speech internally? And it's interesting how this crosses over, because there's a point where you're looking at trying to uphold precepts and vows, and you're failing and you're seeing that, and then you beat yourself up. You become unkind with yourself about not keeping the precepts, the practice, or the vows of right speech or kind speech. So this is very interesting. If we're doing that here, inside, with ourselves, it's definitely going to spill out to others. And the other thing is, we can have empathy and compassion and understanding, so is everyone else. Everyone else is actually trying to keep precepts and vows. They're trying to do their best. They really are. Even those we might judge and feel have the harshest speech may actually... One way to have compassion is to understand that this is their internal dialogue as well. And if we can show them compassion in that moment and be the model of compassion and right speech, kindness and compassion, it can help them to change here and alleviate some of their suffering. So that's what I'm looking at as far as being in the community and how I can participate. Because there's a tendency to want to become preachy. He's not using kind speech, or she's not using right speech and pointing and, you know, pointing outside here like this. You know, I'm pointing. Then I begin to point back here, and I begin to tear myself apart for not practicing right speech. So we have this continuum going of, instead of there being this equality or this meeting and this space and place of kindness and compassion, we're in an internal dialogue that just perpetuates the problem. And it goes out and out and out. Because Sangha and community doesn't stop here. It goes out to everything and everyone and all beings. So we can see that in this practice, that if it starts here, it can penetrate out and every contact with everyone that we meet. So how can we improve our abilities in using kind speech? So we can reflect on our own speech too, not only just the internal work, but reflect before we say something. Think about it for a little while and learn how to bring this amazing patience that we have with ourselves to sit in this practice and stare at this wall for hours. Yeah. We can bring that out into the real world. So the Buddha speaks to his son, Rahula. Whenever you want to perform a verbal act, you should reflect on it. This verbal act I want to perform, would it lead to self-affliction? To the affliction of others? Or to both? Is it an unskillful verbal act with painful consequences, painful results? If on reflection you know that it would lead to self-affliction, to the affliction of others, or to both, it would be an unskillful verbal act with painful consequences, painful results. Then any verbal act of that sort is absolutely unfit for you to do. But if on reflection you know that it would not cause affliction, it would be a skillful verbal action with happy consequences, happy results, then any verbal act of that sort is fit for you to do. While you are performing a verbal act, you should reflect on it. This verbal act I am doing, is it leading to self-affliction, to the affliction of others? Just something to think about. What are my words doing? What kind of effect are they having on this person? So, here's an interesting thing to bring into this mix, that when you leave the way to the way, you attain the way. At the time of attaining the way is always left to the way. It's just doing itself. It's another thing to reflect on. In some cases, we don't really have to do anything, like when we sit zazen. So that all sounds wonderful, but how do we really use this in real life? Say I'm getting yelled at by my boss in front of all my coworkers. Shouldn't I stand up for myself? I shouldn't be a doormat, because there are people who stay in abusive relationships or are abused and they don't defend themselves. I knew this happened with me. I wasn't really taught to defend myself. So at school, people used harsh words with me and picked on me, and I didn't defend myself. So is that incorrect at that point? So in that moment, there's the opportunity again to stop before you reply and rethink all of this, and are you coming from an angry or defensive standpoint? Just check in and see if you are defending an emotion, an ideal, an opinion. And who is self? Who is being defended? Who or what are we defending? So there's this way to observe what is happening within and around us without judging or evaluating. We can identify what we are feeling as opposed to what we are thinking or how we are interpreting the situation. So this is utilizing the ability to be able to get in touch more with how you're feeling rather than how you're thinking. So we can uncover the needs that are at the root of our feelings and then express them clearly. So we can request that another person take an action that might fulfill our needs and enrich our lives without demanding the person satisfy a request in order to avoid judgment or punishment from us. And here's another thing to think of in this point. Is it spoken at the right time? Is it spoken in truth? Is it spoken affectionately? Is it spoken beneficially? Is it spoken with a mind of goodwill? Do you believe that you need to defend yourself? So here are some things to consider about the defense of oneself. How to admonish another skillfully. O bhikkhus, a bhikkhu who desires to admonish another should do so after investigating five conditions in himself. Here it comes. After establishing five other conditions in himself. What are the five conditions which he should investigate in himself? 1. Am I one who practices purity in bodily action, flawless and untainted? 2. Am I one who practices purity in speech, flawless and untainted? Is the heart of goodwill free from malice, established in me towards fellow farers in the holy life? 4. Am I or am I not one who has heard much, who bears in mind what he has heard, who stores up what he has heard, those teachings which are good alike in their beginning, middle, and ending, proclaiming perfectly the spirit and the letter of the utterly purified holy life? Have such teachings been much heard by me, born in mind, practiced in speech, pondered in heart, and rightly generated by insight? 5. Are the rules of conduct for monks and nuns in full, thoroughly learned by heart, well analyzed, with thorough knowledge of their meanings, clearly divided sutta by sutta, and known in minute detail by me? So these five conditions must be investigated in you before you reproach it. We should have little cards printed up. And what other five conditions must you... So you have to read that. Right before you talk, you have to read that whole thing. Yeah. That way, afterwards, you just go take a nap. So, do I speak... Once again, do I speak at the right time or not? Do I speak of facts or not? Do I speak gently or harshly? Do I speak profitable words or not? Do I speak with a kindly heart or inwardly malicious? So can I find compassion when someone is being nasty to me? So the sixth great precept is not discussing faults of others, because when you judge, you place yourself in the dimension of good and bad. Bodhidharma said, self-nature is subtle and mysterious. In the realm of the flawless Dharma, not expounding upon error is called the precept of not speaking of faults of others. In the Buddha Dharma, there is one path, one Dharma, one realization, one practice. Don't permit fault finding. Don't permit haphazard talk. So we can check on the internal chatter and practice compassion during an altercation and turn it around. Or we can drop it if we choose and use or try to use tenderness of speech. So Dogen has one more clue that it goes back to what I was talking about, how addressing others as you would a child. So when we address others with the parental mind of love, which Dogen in his Tenzo Kyokun instructs the monastery's chief cook to develop, to quote, Shushoji, one must speak to others whilst thinking that one loves all living things as if they were one's own children. Such speech is neither sentimental, indulgent, nor patronizing, but the true expression of love which concerns itself with the long-term welfare of the recipient. The Buddha himself gave some good advice on right speech, recommending that before speaking, we should consider if our words are true, kind, and appropriate or helpful for the circumstances. Imagine a community, a society, a world where everyone spoke in such a way. As a teacher once said to his student, if you can't control your mouth, there's no way you can hope to control your mind. This is why right speech is so important in day-to-day practice. Right speech explained in negative terms means avoiding four types of harmful speech. Lies, words spoken with the intent of misrepresenting the truth. Divisive speech, This is spoken with the intent of creating rifts between people. Harsh speech, spoken with the intent of hurting another person's feelings. And idle chatter, spoken with no purposeful intent at all. It's interesting to research and look back on what they considered to be idle chatter, you know, 1,000 years ago. You're not supposed to talk about kings or queens or modes of transportation, food, clothing, smells. It's really interesting. This idle chatter is just looked down upon. So, and another thing that I found that was kind of interesting is from Robert Atkin addresses this in The Mind of Clover. When you notice or when someone brings you your aloofness to your attention, directly or indirectly, take the appropriate steps to restore your intimacy. Let me read it again. When you notice or when someone brings your aloofness to your attention, directly or indirectly, take the appropriate steps to restore your intimacy, as we do in Zazen. So I'm wondering right now if you can recall an unkind name that you were called. Just take a moment. And I wonder if you can recall being spoken to in a harsh or abusive manner. Can you recall being harsh to another or saying unkind words? And do you remember how this made you feel, either being the receiver or the one that is speaking the words or unkind speech? So just sit with that for just a second. And if I'm reflecting, I can remember that there was regret in using harsh speech a lot, that I wish I wouldn't have done that. So then that's where that tendency arises to be harsh with yourself again. So there's that moment to forgive yourself and just forgive yourself because you didn't really know what you were doing. When we reflect back on these times, because what happens is it perpetuates more unkind speech when we start here and then speak again. So if one is to be compassionate and feel kindness toward another, he or she must start with themselves. Notice when you have fallen out of awareness and redirect your mind. What kind of environment gets created when you use harsh speech? We should meet abuse by forbearance. Human nature is so constituted that if we take absolutely no notice of anger or abuse, the person indulging in it will soon weary of it and stop. That was Gandhi. And I'll notice that, and then I'll go right to breathing. I'll just breathe. But not all times. Sometimes I go right to yelling. Hey! That's my potato! You know? That unkind potato. That's how I do it, though.
So it's a physical.
It's physical. It's physical in most cases. I feel, you know, if it's an attack, some other things may be different, but if it's a verbal attack, someone using unkind speech, I notice that I have a physical reaction. It might not be apparent in a movement, but it's apparent in, like, from here to here. There's this feeling. And then that's my cue to I let it all go, but not always. To let it all go and breathe and try to come back to that space that Dogen is talking about, where and Robert Atkin was talking about, the intimacy.
And how do you mean intimacy?
How do you describe the suchness? the space and place of no me, mine, and I? Neutral ground? Stillness? And then in that moment, there's the time to be able to let everything settle and be. And then the response that comes from that space can be no response at times, or can be a kind response, or can be a point to reflect from and kind of process that moment, like we were talking about, how am I going to respond to this right now? What's the kind way to approach this? What's the mindful way to approach the situation or circumstance? And actually thinking about it before there's a response. So there's that stop, for me, stop, kind of listen to my mind a little, breathe, and then come from very consciously checking through these things. But I don't want to come on high like I actually know what I'm doing, because I lose that all the time. I improperly respond to many things. But I think that the point in that is sometimes, like I was speaking to someone too online, one of my friends named Mark, and he made the comment that he only caught himself after and really felt bad about that. And I said, congratulations for seeing that after, you know, because that's a start. And if you don't berate yourself for not catching it right in the moment, you know, and these things and the way they work are extremely subtle. The changes come about when you're in tune with that way, in just being able to not condemn or not judge yourself.
In the moment.
When someone is maybe using unkind speech?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, I think that the way I was raised was, you know, I have to hearken back to the what Jesus was teaching about, you know, you're slapped here, so you give the person the other side. Where I come from, you hit him in the stomach. You give him the other side of your face. So what I'm working with in my way is to no longer respond from that knee-jerk reaction place. Because in most cases, to me, that feels like a conditioned response. It's not a response from a place of stillness or compassion. Or even if you take those words out of it, what's the response to that when there is no response? Because there's actually times when there is no response to something like that. And I'm finding that it's much easier. I always like to be really smart and have a lot of knowledge. It's much easier not to be so smart and not to have so much knowledge and opinions. It's a much more restful life. And not to have all these ready responses. And, you know, I like to be the person who answers all the Jeopardy questions, you know. So I'm giving myself a break. And not thinking that I need to have spontaneous, you know, retractions. Was that the right word? Rebuttals. So that's just for me, though. That's how I'm trying to work it. And once again, it's 95% failure, but that's okay because I'm trying my best. Kendra?
The moment that's very difficult for me is when I have that physical reaction. I know I'm about to say something that's angry. I can feel the hair stand up on the back of my
all the cues.
And there's a part of me that's saying, don't say it. Just don't say it. Just wait. Don't.
Like I was talking about how Mark was catching himself and knowing where he was in the process, you know? And then maybe it was after the fact, but he still realized, here's where I am in the process. He was conscious of that. And even though at that point he was judging himself as not doing it correctly, that he failed, the cue for him was to say, acknowledge the fact that you are seeing that, and then just use the kind speech internally saying, good job, you are acknowledging that. Yeah, you are still going a little further, but that really, really good. You're doing better. That's what I do. The other thing I do is walk away. When I feel all of that coming, I say, this is my cue to exit and just let go and give up and then go walk, go sit for a little while. I know it's not always doable in all life situations, but I think if we're working with that and catching ourselves even later and not condemning and judging, that we're moving toward a better understanding of it and more of putting it into practice. Just watching I think that it's important to watch the loop that you want to beat yourself up and not go to that point. There's a new study showing that you know, inherent gene that we have to the fight or flight, you know, saber-toothed tiger going to come and get us thing, that we're constantly in that now. That we're in that when we're in traffic. We're in that when we're in line at the bank. We're in that when we're at the supermarket. We're in that when we're at work. It's we're constantly in this fight or flight circumstance or situation. And so what happens is we lose touch with the signal because, you know, it's happening too much. So if you're experiencing it and acknowledging the signal, that's great. It's like if you can look at it along a line of where you're realizing and catching yourself, then you can have this kind of acknowledgement that there's progress. You know, and I know we don't really want to always look at progress, but I do think that's kind of important to acknowledge that you are noticing that and that you're utilizing your own inner signal to say, you know, I'm going to go over here. I think that's very beneficial to do that for myself personally.
Yeah, because then maybe the next time it occurs, you might have more options.
So maybe one of the studies that bring these little games up here and we actually perfect social scale.
Please. I think it's interesting because I know that from what I've read about habits, because these are habits, right? They're social things, and we have habits. This is how we react because, you know, that's what Dad did. In the car, somebody cut Dad off. Yeah, lousy, you know? So that's how we do it, you know? And I think that the process that we're in is catching ourselves with that and saying, I don't want to be led by that anymore. And then you kind of rewire your brain, you know? Instead of, I'm going to yell when that person is in front of me, I do nothing. Oh, then maybe they're going to the hospital. I don't know. And that's your response. The brain is interesting, isn't it?